Welcome to the Boston Men's Group Podcast. We're a group of dedicated coaches. If you're interested in personal growth, professional achievement, then take down your guard and tune in.
All right. So welcome audience. You're listening to the Boston Men's Group Podcast. I have with me Tony and myself, Paul. We're both part of the Boston Men's Group on the board. And today we're going to talk about change management. And the reason why I want to bring this up is because no matter where you come from, no matter what type of situation you're in, you have the only thing inevitable is change. And right now we're in times where a lot of society is uncomfortable with change. And so our goal or our hope is to share some of our stories about how we've changed or some of the things that we've dealt with in order to deal with uncertainty. Because by nature, us as human beings are used to comfort, are used to routine, are used to things that are predictable. But as we know, life isn't predictable. And so Tony's gonna share a little bit about his backstory and where he came from and then, you know, how he got to where he's going. So, all right, Tony.
Yes. Well, thank you, Paul. And so good to be able to share this with everyone here on the call. So first and foremost, I started my journey in the biotech space. I was working at companies like Genzyme and Vertex. And I'd always had this finance capacity, working in finance and strategy in these big companies in biotech. And I love what I was doing. It was something that I was known for. And there was something about being able to help patients that was so important to me. But for me, there was always an element of constantly trying to strive for being able to do the things that I want to do. So there was something missing. And I had to navigate through a lot of turns in my career along the path that were challenging. Being passed up for promotions or feeling like I wasn't getting to the place I wanted to be. And the journey was always challenging because of the fact that I knew there was more for me than what I was accomplishing. I was always striving for something, what was next. And so for me, change was always about the next step. And a lot of the companies I had worked for even earlier than my biotech journey was companies like Gillette went through more restructuring and more change than I'd ever expected for a big company. So that was right out of the gate. I had seen so many things happen in the corporate world that were really fascinating to see. And I realized that this is a constant. Mm-hmm. You're constantly going to be faced with change in your career, and you just got to keep on rolling with it.
What do you think was the What change in your life do you feel as though has been the largest change, or the wow. change that you've had to adjust the most to?
Yeah, that's a good one. I would say that the biggest change was leaving the corporate world and going off on my own to start a coaching business. Mm-hmm. I'd started a company before where I was on my own, but nothing was more dramatic than making the commitment that I would not go back to corporate as I am an employee. And it's twofold. When you make a change that is both committing to do something you've never officially done, because coaching is something that, although I've done it in my past, I was never officially calling it my job. So it was a new skill industry, but also truly committing to working on my own. So when you commit to changing two elements of your life at the same time, it's challenging. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I think about change, there's the rational part of the brain, which is, okay, we're changing this because economics makes sense. Well, in this case, you know, going off of your own, economics may not make sense. But there's this book called Switch by Dan and Chip Heath, where they talk about change management. And the analogy that they use is that it's a rider and the elephant. So the rider is the rational part of the brain, which says, I am doing this specifically because this makes sense, rational sense. The elephant is the emotion. So if you can picture a rider on top of an elephant, the elephant actually is the one that is making the decisions. So in one of the case studies, what they do is there was a gentleman that was presenting to the executive board, and he was trying to portray that they were ordering too many different types of gloves for the factory. And one way he could have presented this was he could have put together a 30-page PowerPoint presentation and proposed that if they were to choose from 100 SKUs or 100 different gloves to 30 different gloves, then it would save them that much money. And it would be just, it would just be a typical meeting. But instead, what this gentleman decided to do was collect one of each glove. So physically took every single 130 different gloves or however many it was, and he went in the meeting and he laid out all those gloves. and the executives looked at it and was like, what is this? And they basically said, this is how many different SKUs that we're buying with gloves. They're like, this is absolutely ridiculous. So in the first case, it was more so, okay, here's the rational side, the quant type of method. But in the latter side, it was motivating the elephant. It was trying to acknowledge that the emotion was there. And from that, you know, he was able to influence the executive team. So that's kind of what we have to think about when we think about change, is that even though us as men, pride ourselves on, lack of emotion or being a type of strong-willed, we do have to recognize that there is an underlying pinning that is dictating our behavior. So,
You made me think of something, and I just wanted to say it because I feel like it's so important. I love quotes, and there's this saying about people change when the pain of staying the same is, I'm going to mess this one up. You probably know it better than I now. The pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. And I think that's really what it comes down to, is that when you can get people to see that, this change that is on the horizon is so much better than just staying in the same place. And knowing that there's this element of, if I just make that one step towards the next thing, then it would make a lot of sense.
That's so fascinating, because switching over from retail. So I used to be an operations manager for Staples retail store over in Brighton. And, I stayed there for a while. I stayed there for about, I was with the company for about 8-9 years. And I look back and I think about, the experiences that I got, but then also what made me stay there for longer than I should have. And part of it was, instead of having a positive feedback loop, I had a negative feedback loop. Well, in a different sense. So the way it would work is, I would tell these internal stories, whether it's, let's say it's called, it's October right now. So right now it's October 15th. Internally in my mind, I'd be thinking, okay, so it's a little bit quiet now. So I shouldn't quit because it's quiet. I should enjoy it. And I still have 4 weeks vacation left, on my time. So I would have to give up my 4 weeks vacation and my ability to know exactly what I'm doing. So let's just wait it out until the end of the year, because I want to make sure that Black Friday goes well, Christmas goes well, then what ends up happening, January comes around, like, okay, new year, great. There's a new promo, new everything. And then all of a sudden, February, March come in. I'm like, okay, great. So the fiscal year's over. I might as well stick it out for bonus because we get paid in bonus.
Yeah.
In April, right? So then I get my bonus. Then I'm like, okay, great. Now I can use two vacations. So then I take on my two vacations, whatever. 2 months go by, and then it's like, oh man, now we have to prep for back to school. So I might as well stick it out for back to school. And then, you know, this will be my last back to school, I swear. So nine back to schools later, you end up just in this vicious cycle. And then at the same time, you're thinking about this utopian mindset where you're like, oh yeah, you know what? I'm pretty close to promotion. Let's see if I get promoted next year or the year after. And then all of a sudden you end up in this place, like I ended up in this place where like, what am I doing with my life? You know, where it's like, what's funny is exactly what you said, where I didn't necessarily have to have a clear direction for where I was going. Like I didn't have to have a why. I just had to know that I wasn't going to go back. That's all I needed to know was, you know, I put enough blood, sweat, and tears into this that anything, you know, is better than what I'm doing now. And eventually, you know, as the things start to change, what I slowly, and you can add to this if you want, where you slowly start to realize that the things that you feared, you know, the things that are uncertain or not being able to pay certain bills or not being seen in a particular light, once that actually happens, for me, I looked at it and I was like, wow, everything I feared wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. Yeah. And then you just build up this confidence. Like, okay, now I can just focus on being more proactive rather than reactive. And you develop this kind of sense of mental callus or mental resilience. So,
I love that.
Yeah. What about yourself? I mean, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to play off what you just said, because now it's like bringing up so much more for me, because there's an element of what you said that that I know for me was important, and I think it especially came up for me when I became a coach. When you feel like, okay, well, I can't experience these things of like, what if I don't pay my bills, or what if like I can't, what if I'm not successful? Like all these what if scenarios start kind of playing around in my head, because this change is pretty dramatic, even though you maybe paint a vision of these things, you know, I'll make it as a coach if I try really hard. The reality is that you have to invite in the possibility of failure. Mm-hmm. And there's a saying that if you're willing to feel everything, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that, and this is not my saying, I think Peter Bregman is an author of, he wrote a book called Lead with Emotional Courage. But what it means is that it really means that if you're willing to experience failure, if you're willing to experience the emotions that go along with, being down to your last dime, then what happens is you get on the other side of it and you say, I can do just about anything if I'm willing to be open to sadness, to experiencing the pain. But in reality, it's not going to be that bad. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be that way. I'm just opening myself up to those experiences, because if I don't, then what do I do? I paralyze myself with the fear of staying the same. That's why I wanted to bring it up, because I felt like what you were saying earlier, just it really resonated with me and a lot of the feelings that came in when I was experiencing the changes that I went through. And what I hear every day as a coach.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think about this a lot. A lot of I don't know if there was a certain switch, but I was listening to Gary Vaynerchuk, and he's been switching it over to, you know, your return on investment should be your happiness, not your wealth. It's like that's the ROI, right? Yes. And a lot of his content, is basically like if you're if you're if you're making 100,000, 200,000 and you're miserable, then what's the whole point versus 75 or 80? And then, but you get to make things on your own term. And I think that's very powerful because there's two instances. There's someone gets a high salary because a company has a big contract and they have a large client, and then that warrants that type of amount of compensation. Or yeah, there's like, you know, building from ground up your paycheck. Like there's it would almost be like when Pedro Martinez, after he won the World Series, he was asked, you know, and he went to another team. He basically said that one World Series in 2004 was worth 3 or 4 or 5 World Series somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it was because of the amount of work that he put in and like, and everything else. And I feel like that's the same instance when it comes to, you know, making that leap where you're literally starting from ground zero and building your way up. And through that process, you kind of have to figure out like, so all this junk that I have, all these things that I've created as habits, as consumption habits, do they really matter or do they not? And you have to prioritize that. And there's nothing like that to be able to say, okay, you know, every single piece of thing that you own, you know, you can say, does this actually bring joy or value in my life? Yeah. Or is just this something that I purchased on a whim when I was having a crappy day? So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's a good point. I mean, and it's hard to really deal with that, that emotion and that feeling of attachment, if you will, to things and to, not just things, but also, you know, even habits, like, you know, the habits of things you do every day that you're like, well, I do that because that's what I do. And I've been doing it that way for as long as I've known. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even inside of work, you may do things certain ways because that's why we've been doing it, right? Yeah. You've heard that saying about companies, but the attachment to that is because it's what I know, it's comfortable, it's what I do. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh God, what happens if I didn't do it that way? And that's the mere definition of change. Yeah. And so, and that's really where I start thinking about, how you get people to break the habits of change, to make a change. And it gets really exciting. That's why, you know, as a coach, I really enjoy seeing people make changes that are going to put them in a place where they want to be. But it's really hard for them to kind of get through that process. They have to detach from what it is that's holding them back from that change. And it has to be just something that they're really looking to do, that they want. You might have heard the concept of like a from to, like, are they running from something?
Yeah.
Running to. And I know this has come up for me personally and in conversations where, like, sometimes you're like running from a job or from, you know, a situation, not running to something new. And when you're running from something, almost anything looks better. Right?
Yeah.
But then you sometimes run into something that is not really quite as good as it could be. Mm-hmm. So that is something to be careful about when you think about change.
So based on that, you know, that trigger point or that, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, based on the clients that you've helped and coached, is there anything that really sticks out? Like I just, like, or a phrase or whatnot, where I just got to the point where I X or Y, whatever it is. Is there anything that sticks out?
Yeah. I mean, well, it really depends on the situation, but, because each person has their own, like triggers and ways that they talk, the words make all the difference.
Yeah.
In how they show up. But, if the frustration's coming from, a situation where it's like driven by some one person doing something to them, or they're speaking very disparagingly about that one person doing something to them, it's usually a thought that they're running from that situation. Mm. But if it's something where they say, like, look, you know, for example, in a job situation, there may be a situation they say, okay, well, look, you know, I feel like I've learned all I could, and I just feel bored. I'm not inspired, and I feel like I need something more, or like, I feel like, is this it? If I hear that conversation, that gives me a clear sensation that this person is just not lit up any longer and they need something more in their life.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whereas if they come in and they say, oh, my boss is a jerk, and I feel like it's their fault, you know, as coming from the victim mindset, there's more to it than just, okay, I'm running from this person. Mm. You know, there's more to it. Mm.
So when you hear that, when you hear, you know, I just don't know what to do. Like, this is it. I really don't know where my life is going. Like, how do you approach that? What are some of the things that you ask, or some of the questions that you ask?
Yeah, we start to, first of all, we take some time to just really decompress from the emotions that are attached to that, because usually people, when they say they don't know what to do, there's a lot of things that have to be unwound. You start to get them away from the emotions, and then you say, okay, well, let's talk about, you know, what's coming up. What do you know about yourself? Like, where's the awareness around who you are as a person? And where do you want to apply what you know about you into the world? Is it that you could do what you want in your company? You just got to take a different lens, a different approach. So mm-hmm. is the change something you want to change about how you look at the world? Mm-hmm. Or is it something about the world that you want to change, the world that you live in, the environment you live in? So mm-hmm. it's not to say that you can change your external environment per se, but you can change where you work. You can change where you show up. But maybe you stay where you are and you find a way to look at your work differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much talk about this, you know, going from corporate atmosphere to starting your own business. And we don't really talk about, or the dialogue doesn't really go through finding a happy medium of being able to change your environment, or just change the way that you talk to people or lead people. It's mostly binary, where it's like the extreme. I just need to make this amount in my side hustle and then just completely leave, instead of working it out and working out conflicts and, you know, community and everything else. So,
yeah. That's great.
So what would you say over the last couple of years, as in regards to habits, either, so it's a two-phase question. What is one bad habit you let go of, or what is one new habit that you've acquired recently? Yeah,
that's good. That's a good one. Yeah. So I would say one of the ones that I really loved is embracing the fact that I used to go to bed when things were done.
Yeah.
So I would set out a plan and say, these are the things I'm doing today, and I won't go to bed till they're done. Very unhealthy.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the day becomes a whirlwind of activities, and you have control over some of them, and some of them you have no control over. Mm-hmm. So my habit was, I'm not going to let that rule my life. Mm-hmm. I became what I'd say is more of an author of the day and less of a reporter of how I make my day happen. So that means is that I want to make sure that I set a plan, and it's not going to go 100% to plan, but it's going to be, I'm going to be in control of what happens. And those things that I have control over, I'm going to make happen. But when it, at the end of the day, you know, 11 o'clock comes around, I know it's late still. I have to just say, this is enough. Mm-hmm. And then the reason why I do that is because in the mornings, I committed myself to a morning routine that I stick to, like it's like an autopilot now. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that I stick to my morning routine, and if I go to bed late, I can't do that. So really, it's my morning routine that has really become the starting point of changing my mindset around all the things that happen throughout my day. And it's made all the difference.
So for the audience listening, if you were like Tony, or just like in that situation where you find yourself not going to sleep until you're finished, Tony, what advice would you give to the audience to try to snap that or break away from that?
Start a morning routine. Start a morning routine that has you mindfully and intentionally creating your day. And by doing so, it changes the whole cadence of how you go through your day. And ultimately, what it will end up being is that you will end your day with the intention of starting the next day in the same way. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm always a little bit, concerned of whether or not this sounds too coachy.
No, I think I ran into the similar journey where it was a couple of years ago. It was, I was about to go to sleep, and it was September 2017. And I was probably 30, 40 pounds overweight. And I told my wife, I basically said, all right, from this day forth, I'm going to be in the best shape of my life. And she just looked at me and was like, whatever. You said that before. And I was like, no, I'm serious. And the thing that I did was I connected with another person to hold me accountable, just in that sense. But it wasn't so much the fact that it was like, okay, I'm going to hire a physical trainer or a personal trainer, and they're going to make me puke. Like it wasn't that. It was more so, and this is my good friend Mike, he basically said, all right, Paul, so you have a kid, you're having trouble sleeping, newborn and whatnot, how much time do you have during the day? I'm like, maybe 30 minutes or 40 minutes. He's like, okay. So this was at a coffee shop, and he types a kettlebell complex movement, which is basically 7 movements for time. And he's basically like, okay, just do 5 rounds of this, and that's it. And on paper, it's like, okay, it's just basically 30 words and all these numbers. I'm like, oh, this looks really easy. I get there, and it's rough. it probably takes me about, I think, probably 26 minutes, just nonstop workout after workout after workout. And he's like, okay, great. So you're going to do the same thing for 3 days a week. You're going to go in there, and then you leave the gym. And the thing that was so weird was that I would go to the gym, I would get there, stay there for 20 minutes, and the person at the front desk would be like, what, you're done? That's it? And it was having the discipline to say, yep, I'm done. Like, I'm done. I'm going to finish whatever it is. So 2 months passed by, and I go from, I think it's like 25 minutes to 21 minutes. So I shaved 4 minutes off the time. And at the time, I think I lost 10, 15 pounds. And so I said, okay, Mike, do I increase the weight? Do I do all these things? He's like, no, the only thing you need to do is just try to get as low as you can. So I got to the point where I think I was there for maybe like 13 minutes, and then I was gone. But he's saying basically the only thing that he was looking for is consistency, is that he could show up every single day and leave some room on the table. And he talks about it. He's like, if you were to choose 1 hour every 1 hour a week versus, 10 minutes a day every day, or a little bit more than 10 minutes every day, he said he would choose 10 minutes a day every day.
Yeah.
Mainly because it's more of the routine. So as a result of doing that, I had something to look forward to. It was like looking forward to, okay, can I beat 16 minutes? Can I beat 15 minutes? And that was the anchor to everything. Just like you said, like your morning routine was an anchor to everything.
Yeah.
Where I woke up at 5. If I ate pizza or drank the night before, I'd end up a minute over. But yeah, if I ate well, then I would end up 10 seconds shorter. And so it became the anchor to everything. And so it started with wake up at 5. Then it was like, okay, get my clothes ready. Then it was eat the right food. Then it was journaling. And it just, it piled one on top of another and top of another. And now it's, you know, manifested itself to, yeah, I wake up at 4 a.m. and I go to the gym Monday through Friday. So 2 years later, I'm in the best shape of my life. And it wouldn't have started unless I anchored having the excuse of, okay, I want to beat my last time, or I want to just get better every day. And I think it was Hemingway that did this, where he would write and he would leave, he would start writing and then he would leave the computer, the typewriter open purposely. That way he had like a reason to wake up in the morning. And so it kind of reminds me of what you're talking about, is like just leaving work open rather than letting it, you know, fill up with anxiety, and then you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't go back to bed. So
yeah, it's great.
Yes,
powerful. It's powerful. And it's like that whole, you know, you're not, the competition you have is to constantly just making those incremental improvements from where you were the day before. And and when you look at it over a long period of time, you look back and you say, holy crap, look where I came from. I was doing that back then, and now look at me now. You know,
yeah,
like you could say, you know, I say this jokingly, say like, you know, someone who says that I'm a non-athlete who's, you know, overweight and what have you, and I look at myself that, you know, a year later, and I could be like a fit athlete who runs marathons.
Yep.
And it happens slowly but surely by taking one step at a time and creating habits that just become a part of your day.
Yep.
And that's really it.
Yeah, it's shrinking the change. It could be something as simple as, you know what, over the next week, just wake up at 6 or 5. See how it feels. Because what'll end up happening is they wake up and they're like, oh, I'm really tired. But then they think in the back of their head, they're thinking, wow, what am I going to do with all this time? Oh, I actually have to think about what I'm going to do today. And then that like Viktor Frankl talks about, where there's the stimulus and there's the response.
Yes.
And life is in between, like the stimulus and in response. And so that allows that space to widen so that you can be more mindful of what's going on and how you're reacting to things. What does your morning routine look like? What are some of the things that you do?
So it's going to sound a little quirky, but I call it the miracle morning.
I'm very familiar.
But it's my own miracle morning. So, it just happens to have the same name. I start the morning off with a movement, and, so it's exercise of some sort. Usually I would do a morning walk with my dog. And so I'll do, Audible book, and I'll walk my dog. I'll be out in nature, and I'll do that for, you know, a good 2 to 3 miles, with my dog. And then I get back and do some meditation and journaling. So as soon as I get all those done, then I feel like I've gotten myself off to a good start. And I'm at this point, I haven't looked at a single email. So my day has not been ruined yet. And then I start to think about, okay, what am I have for breakfast? You know, some good water. I'll get a good amount of water in me, because hydration is important.
Yep.
So at the very least, that foundation is key. What happens after that is what you do with it, the intention you take. But that's the foundation.
Yep. So. Yeah. Great. Great. Yeah. So, all the listeners out there, if you have a morning routine, or, you know, have any questions about a morning routine, feel free to reach out to us, leave it in the comments, and, that's it. So Tony, anything else you want to add?
No, I do have to run. I'm going to call, but I definitely think that this is, you know, change is hard, but it's necessary. And the more you embrace it, the easier it becomes. So,
all right, great. Thanks, Tony.